This is Pat Prescott, host of Favorite Things. You know, just like you at home, we here at WBGO are paying tribute to the life and musical legacy of David Sanborn. I started radio in 1975, and that was the same year that David's first solo project was released. I have played his music ever since, and I'm honored to have gotten to know him as a friend. You know, back in 2010, the late, great Michael Bourne interviewed David Sanborn on WBGO. They both grew up in St. Louis, and they both had such a tremendous love and respect for the music. So it's no surprise that that conversation was both intimate and insightful. And obviously, at this point, it's priceless. We're going to share highlights from that conversation, along with some Sanborn favorites, as we honor the memory and music of David Sanborn.
But you got started wanting to play by listening to
KATZ,
yeah,
really, and here in the Ray Charles Band at Kiel Auditorium.
Yep.
You know, you remember when the St. Louis Hawks?
Absolutely.
There was one year, it might have been more than one year, where there was a concert series after the game.
Yeah.
And you know, Basie played there. Stan Kenton.
I was at the Stan Kenton.
Yeah.
And Cannonball Adderley and Wes Montgomery.
Yeah.
And the four freshmen, I remember.
Right, exactly. And, well, Ray Charles played there.
And they would actually play on the court sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. And and then sometimes there was, I remember there was
back
another.
Toward the end.
Yeah, yeah, back toward the end. Yeah.
And that was it. That's when the lights went on for me.
We were talking about Ray Charles, and I asked you to pick a Ray Charles record.
Well, I thought I'd pick Come Rain or Come Shine just because it's a sentimental favorite. You know, for me, I just love that song, and it just, there's something about it that's just really touching about the way he does it. It's just so soulful, and you know, it's that in that big kind of syrupy, you know, background of like strings and voices and stuff that, you know, gets kind of maligned by a lot of people. It's not that raw stuff that he usually does that I prefer, actually, but something about this tune and just him singing it, especially at the end.
And here, it's a song by Harold Arlen and Johnny Mercer.
Johnny Mercer,
you know,
yeah.
You got the son of a cantor from Buffalo, you know, who every note the cat composed is like drenched in the blues somehow. And then Johnny Mercer from Savannah,
Georgia. Yeah.
He's got that whole thing here. So even in the ballads, you think, that's not a blues. It's got the blues at the heart of it,
yes,
right
it does.
There.
That's right.
And everything Ray Charles sang at the heart of it.
That's right.
I'm going to love you like no one's loved you. Come rain or come shine. High as a mountain, deep as a river. Come rain or come shine.
Yeah.
It's all in those little moments.
Yeah. It's he just, you know, he just tells the story of the song.
And you've been lucky because you've been able to do some of that after a while. I mean, you've been able to, you know what, I want to play with Ornette Coleman, or I want to play, you know, I want to play this music. I want to do what I want to do.
Well, you know, I mean, it's all about a matter of making those choices, you know, and just committing to them. You know, I mean, when I was working as a sideman, because that's mostly how I made my living, you know, in the 60s and the 70s, was being on the road as a sideman for people. And at some point I said, you know, if I'm going to do stuff on my own, I got to make the commitment and I got to cut this other stuff loose. And, you know, so you just kind of, you do that, and you don't try to see, well, what's the logical thing to do. You just, it's like becoming a musician in the first place. It's not a really sensible, you know, choice of careers. You know, if you're looking for common sense, I mean, you do it because you love it, and it's almost like there's nothing else you can do but that.
You know, in a way, though, I mean, not to be too dramatic about it, but becoming a musician is what saved your life as a kid.
Well, in more than, you know, in almost a literal way.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I was, you know, I had polio when I was a kid. I was in an iron lung for almost a year and paralyzed from the neck down for almost a year after that. So from 3 to 5, so it was like, you know, whoa. And then I'd always had physical problems my whole life. And when I was 11, the doctors recommended that I play a wind instrument for therapy to kind of build up my lungs. And this was right about the time I was hearing saxophones everywhere, you know, the Honky Tonk and Ray Charles and, you know, whatever. And I said, that's what I want to do. When I saw that concert at Kiel Auditorium, you know, that was, if there was a moment, you know, epiphany, that was certainly it. And, you know, in a way, it saved me, you know, it certainly, you know, helped my breathing and just physically gave me a focus for, you know, coordination and some of the things that were difficult for me as, you know, having gone through what I went through. And it also gave me, you know, a vision about what I wanted to do with my life, you know.
It's like the whole notion that rehab is hard work, but then it, when your passion becomes rehab,
I never thought about it that way, but, you know, that's really kind of, in very real sense, true. I mean, I know it now that I'm older because it's getting harder, you know, and I realize that, you know, that's why I have eliminated all the things that have gotten in the way of that, you know, all my vices, you know, like drinking and drugs and all that stuff, you know, fell by the wayside because it really became a matter of, well, do you want to play music or you want to screw around? You want to do this other stuff? And, you know, to be really frank about it, there was a few moments when I said, well, I don't know. I'm not really sure. But then it was like, you know what? Come on. Just get over yourself here for a minute. And, you know, and so because it's such a physical thing for me, I for everybody, really, it's like I have to almost think of myself as like having the discipline. I'm not an athlete, but having that same kind of mentality about the approach to what I do is like, I have to discipline myself. And for me, it's not easy just because I have problems with my left hand and stuff like that. So I can't, you know, I can't screw around with that. I got to do whatever it is that I got to do to keep myself in as good a shape as I can, just to be able to maintain. Forget about trying to get, you know, better. I'm just, you know, working just to maintain. And, you know, for better or for worse, whatever level I play at is about as good as I can play. You know, I shouldn't admit that, but, you know, it's true.
To talk about this Butterfield Blues Band, because this is the first band, that's the first blues record I ever bought, was the first one.
The very first one,
one
born in Chicago.
And all that.
Right.
You know, I bought it because Sam Lay was a drummer and he had gold shoes.
Yeah.
And I
was
a drummer.
It was very impressive.
Yeah, and I sang Mojo with a rock band, so he sang Mojo.
And Sam, the way he played on the crown of the cymbal like that?
Yeah. But you came into the Butterfield Band. And
right when Bloomfield left, he split to form the Electric Flag. And Butterfield hired horn players, and that was it for me.
And here's your first solo, right?
In My Own Dream is In My Own Dream and Last Hope's Gone. I think In My Own Dream was the first one.
On the soprano,
yeah. I'd gotten it 2 days earlier, and it got stolen a day or so later.
And you never played the soprano again?
Very rarely. I played it very rarely. But that particular soprano was a real special, kind of an old busher.
And who did the arrangements on this?
We kind of worked them up together. I don't remember. I don't think anybody did it per se. Somebody, either Dinwiddie or Keith Johnson, did the horn chart, did the horn arrangement, the, you know, little background stuff.
But here's David Sanborn. Way back when? How old were you?
21. Thank you.
Carl Butterfield.
Yeah.
And David Sanborn's solo.
That's right.
Yeah. On Jazz 88. That's from the Elektra Years collection. And your first solo with them.
Yeah.
Was that your first solo ever? Did I ask you that?
You know, I might have played on the record before that, but I don't remember. That's the first one I remember playing, you know.
Come a long way, kiddo. When you've enjoyed, you know, success like you have, you've made very popular records, and you get an audience, do they come expecting things? Does that drive you nuts? Because I remember you did that Ornette Coleman project in the Knitting Factory. It was years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, but people wanted to hear, you know, something groovier or something. You know, it's like, well, this is just as much me.
Yeah, just going back to when I started out, I got into being a musician because I loved the music and I loved where it took me. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a career choice. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't that wasn't the psychology of it. It was, I do this music, you know, and that includes the pop music too. I did it because that's what I wanted to do at that time. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll take full responsibility for everything I've done.
Right.
You know, because that's what I meant at the time.
Right.
And I mean, I have all kinds of reason. I can explain to you why I did this or that or this or that at any particular time. And, but at the end of the day, I tried to be as honest with myself as I could about how I felt about music at that moment in my life. You know, if there was one time that I did something that was conscious, you know, in terms of like change in direction, I was in the middle of doing a record, a more popish record called Close Up. And I was in the middle of that record saying, I gotta go someplace else now. I don't want to do this thing anymore. And the next record I made was a record called Another Hand.
Right.
Which was with Bill Frisell and
Charlie Hayden
and Joey Barron was on some stuff. Jack DeJohnette was on some stuff. Mulgrew Miller, different people, and that was a conscious effort. I mean, I still did on that album what I wanted to do, what felt right for me to do, but the what preceded that, what was the decision in doing that was like I need to. All of a sudden, I became aware that I was going in a direction that I didn't want to go in anymore. It didn't feel very authentic to me. And I just made a conscious change.
And Jimmy McGriff, a little bit south of East St. Louis.
Wow.
You know, in all those years we were there, I don't think I ever went across the river.
You never went to East St. Louis?
No, I used to listen to Leo's Blue Note Club on
I played
show.
There, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I used to listen to Spider-Man. Well, you know, used to broadcast.
You know that his broadcast booth was actually a utility closet. That it was behind the bar. And they cut out through the, you know, what do you call it, plasterboard?
Yeah.
Cut out this thing, look like with, you know, with shears or something, this thing. And they masking taped a piece of plexiglass over that so he could see into the room. But the room was, I mean, really like a little utility closet. And there was no soundproofing. So you could, you know, Don James was the organ player. And you hear this boom, 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 boom. You could hear the bottom end of the organ play back, you know, through all of his when he was talking.
So David Sanborn is with me here talking about
St. Louis
when we were kids.
Yeah.
Huh.
And you have a grandchild or children?
I have a grandchild now, which is what I wrote the second song for, Only Everything. I mean, it's like, well, what does she mean to you? Well, Only Everything.
Yeah, and you and Genevieve, right?
Genevieve. That's
or
very
Genevieve.
How continental of you, Michael?
Well, yeah, in St. Louis, it's Genevieve.
Yeah, that's right.
My cousin's Genevieve.
Yeah,
Jenny.
Genevieve. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and you and I have been hanging around the world too much. Maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's got to be a moment when you look at her and you think, good.
Alfie, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, good. This is good. I lived.
I lived to see this.
Yeah.
And I get it now. It's like, that's why I'm here. Kind of just, here it goes. Just, it's on and on and on.
Live to see her, live to be inspired by her.
Yes, that's exactly right.
So here's the song. It's called Only Everything. And were you watching her playing or something? Or are you just thinking about her?
I was just thinking about her.
David Sanborn, it's the title track from the new album, Only Everything, here on WBGO. David Sanborn, good to have him here on WBGO.
Thanks for joining us for this celebration of the life and music of our dear friend David Sanborn, with highlights from a 2010 interview with the late, great Michael Bourne, two national treasures. This is a priceless archive, and we're delighted to share it with you. This is 88.3. WBGO.